Welcome to the Pressure Proof Creative Podcast, the show which talks about the good, the bad, and at times ugly effects that the pressure to generate genius on demand can have on the creative brain, and how you, like my guests, can better protect your most vulnerable and most valuable tool of the trade. So if you're the owner of a creative brain, keep listening. And if you like what you hear, don't forget to subscribe, like, comment, and share. Hi, my name's Matt, and today I'm joined by another Matt, Matt Gooden, the co-founder and ECD at Who, What, Why. I first met Matt at Wieden & Kennedy 20 years ago, when it was a cross between a madhouse and the Hacienda. And since then, his creative brain's gone on to generate some of the most famous and heavily awarded advertising in the world. For those of you who don't know him, Matt's about as far away from a suited and booted Donald Draper as you could possibly imagine. Composed of 10% water and 90% tattoo ink, his hair stretches down past his shoulders, a baseball cap is perched on top of his head, and he's dressed head to toe in black denim, AC/DC logos, and silver skulls, looking more at home in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame than a Ponzi wine bar in Shoreditch. According to Matt, he's been fired twice in his career, which he's very, very proud of, and over the years he's kept himself sane thanks to copious amounts of deafening music, lashings of herbal supplementation, wink wink, remaining true to his personal values and laid-back childhood, and retaining a healthy balance between giving a shit and not giving a shit. Matt's also incredibly modest, telling me that he was lucky to hold the Guinness World Record for the world's shortest TV ad. He was lucky to work with Tony Scott and make the last ever Marlboro commercial. He was lucky that the Honda clients believed in impossible dreams and challenged him and Ben to make Honda Cog when the script was presented. He was lucky Rutger Hauer agreed to do the voiceover for the Lurpak campaign. He was lucky to meet U2 and present Bono with some ideas for a Nokia partnership. That he was even luckier to shoot with Jack White in The Dead Weather. He was lucky to make the most controversial advertising ever with Paddy Power. And now he's even luckier to have his own agency with Sean Thompson and Ben Walker that's built on his values. He also told me, and I quote, "Nothing I've ever done is really that important." So without further ado, let's hear from a big man.
Hello.
Hey, Matt, thank you for coming on today.
This is the most stressed I've ever been. You know that? I laid awake at night last night thinking about this. No, I'm not. I'm never stressed.
All right, so we've just got a new printer. So what the fucking chances of that working? I don't know why we got it. We've got this big, bloody, horrible, complicated printer. Let me just print something out. Can I just have a quick fag and then print something out?
Okay, mate. So shall we crack on?
Yeah, okay.
For those who don't know you, can we just start by hearing a bit about who you are, what you currently do, and why you do it?
I think, you know, this is good. Like, who you are is a really good question, right? Because you go, I wonder if most people don't really have defined it. You know, it's like I've always had quite a strong sense of myself, but I've never really thought about it either until, you know, we're very keen at Who, What, Why to do a lot more visual identity and branding in that sort of capacity. And when you think about, you know, what can lead to a good visual identity, you've got to look at what the values are of the brand. And I think that's the same as people. You know, you look like who you are because of the values you have. And I look like what I am because of certain values, you know, and I think it's pretty interesting thing that maybe a lot of people haven't defined their values clearly enough. You know, I think I've always had them, but, you know, it's quite nice to have thought about them only recently, really. You know, I think for me, they would be, you know, I'm very honest, I'm optimistic, I'm a bit rebellious or non-conformist, and I like to have fun. So then, you know, if you go honest, I'm very black and white. Visually, my look is kind of black and white. That's all I ever wear. You know, so I'm very sort of, you know, either or and straightforward in a way. I'm very optimistic. I guess, in my outlook, in the way, I don't know, maybe that doesn't come out so visually, but then, you know, rebelliousness, yeah, it comes out a bit, and that's about the music that I listen to a lot, you know, and it's quite interesting. It's an interesting way of thinking about, you know, who you are by your values. And I think, you know, I'm going to talk a lot about that throughout this, because I think once you've defined those, you can work out, you know, how that works with your life and the forces around you, in a way.
So what got you into advertising in the first place, then?
I wasn't very good at school. The only thing I could do at school was draw, really. And it wasn't that I wasn't interested in other subjects. I've just got a shit memory. And, you know, I remember being fascinated with human biology, but when it came to doing the O-level, I just couldn't remember anything. And the only thing that I really could do was draw, and I got two A's in design and art, and I can't even remember, but you know, it was enough to get me into art college at Croydon, and I chose to do graphic design because it was, you know, at the time there was magazines like Arena and The Face, and you know, I just used to love that stuff, and you know, lots of cool record labels around, and so that I really sort of took to that, and you know, I still really love it today. I love every aspect of it, you know, typography, photography, illustration. I think it's really amazing. It's an amazing creative world that I work in.
So what do you think it means to be a pressure-proof creative from your perspective?
I think if you're, you know, a pressure-proof creative, it's, I think, look, you've got to have, with any commercial creative job, you've got to have pressure, right? Because yeah, you've got deadlines. You've got, it's not, you know, I wasn't talented enough to become a full-fledged, you know, a genuine artist. And I always quite liked money, to be honest, you know, it's like, but, so I did choose a commercial creative career. And with that goes deadlines, because you're a business, you know, you're in a business, and you've got to be realistic about that. And I think, you know, at the same time, I don't think pressure's bad.
Mm. Well, it's kind of like if you take the pressure away from an athlete, there's no game. Do you mean there's no fun? You need the pressure in order to have the game, in order to have the fun there. It's just kind of like working out, well, okay, if an athlete can handle the pressure, they need the competition. They thrive off the competition. So how can we with our brains?
Well, I think the, you've got to, as a, again, a commercial creative business, you've got to put pressure on people, and you've got to be tough, and you've got to push them. And again, I've been lucky enough to have people that have done that with me, and you always thank them. You know, you end up making brilliant work. So, you know, there's got to be a bit of tough love there somewhere. Mm. You know, I think it can be a really good thing. So, you know, if you think about, to be a pressure-proof creative, I guess you've got to embrace it, you know. It's a good thing. Okay. You know, it can make you focus. Without deadlines and pressure, you know, I think I'd love to do it. I'd love to explore, you know, creative routes and thinking forever, but you know, it's just not realistic, and it probably wouldn't end up, 9 times out of 10, you'd probably come back to the thing you first thought of anyway.
I totally agree. And where do you think the pressure comes from then? As a creatively wired individual, is it an external thing? Is it an internal thing? Is it a combination?
I think, you know, pressure is it comes from everything really, doesn't it? It's like there's really is multiple, you know, sort of aspects in everyone's life. You know, as I said, you know, like financial worry is, you know, it's a huge one. I think it's, you know, it's the number one worry and stress in anyone's life, you know. So it's how you know, with me, I think I am bloody lucky. I do really consider myself lucky that, you know, I've chosen a career by doing the, first of all, doing something that I love, and it happens to be a commercial job as well, which pays bloody well, and I really don't want for anything. So I do consider myself lucky there. You know, so I don't have that money worry that a lot of people do, and I'm bloody lucky, really.
But it allows us to buy some nice guitars as well, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I guess when we started Who, What, Why, that was a whole different level, because you go, our asses were on the line. I mean, we're in a great place now, but, you know, there was a, you know, first, I'd imagine the first year and a half, we were shitting it, really, you know, because we didn't really have a plan B. I didn't want to go back into a big agency, you know, and you sort of just knuckle down and you do it. You have to do it. And again, that's the pressure thing. So even, you know, money worry in a way, it can be a real driving force. You know, it makes you focus and it makes you work hard. So, maybe that is, again, just you can work hard and get through it, I think. You know.
I mean, you're obviously like massively famous within the industry for the stuff you've done. What was it like setting up an agency and going on your own and kind of making that happen?
Well, I didn't really care. I'm not bothered about what other people do, to be honest. I don't know, I never have been. I just thought, as long as I'm doing the thing that I love doing and making it the best it can be, you know, I'm not massively interested in what other people are doing. And I don't know, sometimes you might see something out there in the real world and you go, fuck, that's pretty good. But it's not like I pour through industry mags or anything like that, or even really look at the awards stuff, to be honest. I mean, maybe I should, maybe it's inspiring, but I sort of think with our business as a creative, you can't do what went before anyway, so it's a bit pointless looking at other stuff. Maybe you can learn theories and lessons from it, but there's no point in replicating it. I mean, back in the day when we first started, people used to pour through the DNAD annual and then try and do it again, and you just go, well, that's a waste of time. It's not going to be very good for that client's business. You know, it's not going to cut through if it's been done before, so... Yeah, I've never really been that interested in what other people have done, what other agencies are doing.
I mean, to be fair, a lot of the times the stuff you were pouring through on DNAD and Canon stuff would have been your own stuff anyway, so...
Yeah, I'd just be looking at my own stuff. That's humble.
How did it change? How did your mindset change when you started winning all these awards and started doing this kind of work that became incredibly world famous?
Well, it didn't really. We never did it for awards. I don't know. I just always just wanted to do exciting things that were different and broke rules. You know, and I think that's naturally what. I guess that's naturally what's always been in me, and what maybe the mischievous character again comes out a bit in what I do, because, you know, it's cool just to do stuff that just twists things up a bit, I think.
Do you think that's been one of your saving graces, an ability not to follow the conformity, not to follow the norm?
Yeah, possibly, yeah. Yeah, I mean, again, it's just a natural thing. Not conforming is essentially what creative advertising has to do to stand out. And it's just what I do naturally anyway, you know. Mm. I mean, to your point about where the other sort of forces as well, where does stress come from? So money can be a huge stress. I think fear culture in agencies can be really terrible, you know. But again, I've been so lucky, you know, I've been in places that have, you know, rarely had that culture. You know, not that I wasn't pushed. I was pushed, but not in the wrong way, and always for the right reasons, for creative reasons. You know, but I think if you're asked the unreasonable or unrealistic of me, if anyone does that, then yeah, you do have sleepless nights.
What does stress mean to you, out of interest?
Generally, I think stress comes from being the feeling of being trapped, and you know, that can come from any way. So it could be financial and you feel like you're trapped in a shit job because you have to earn the money, or you're trapped creatively and you can't express yourself because you're in the wrong company, or you're trapped in the wrong relationship and it's not working out. So, you know, you, it is, to me, it all comes back to being free again and being in the right places. And, you know, I was thinking of, like, do you know the Shawshank Redemption when, you know, Dufresne, he locks himself in the radio room, doesn't he? And he broadcasts the opera into the sort of inmate's yard. And everyone looks up, and Morgan Freeman says, you know, for those few minutes, every man in that prison was free. And again, like, music to me is so important, and it can be very liberating, and, you know, and it just makes me feel free sometimes. And so it's also good to have something that isn't anything to do with work, that you can just walk away from it all and let rip, you know.
Absolutely. What does freedom mean to you then?
Freedom is just doing exactly what you want to do. I mean, again, it's something that's true to yourself and, you know, following your passion, really, isn't it?
Is that something you've been brought up with, or was that from your parents, or was that something you had to learn?
I think my mum was always very, I think really she wanted me to be a proper artist and pursue that, but, you know, they never once put me off of doing anything that I wanted to do, you know. So they gave me a pretty free rein, to be honest. So I guess I was brought up with, you've got to go and do what you want to do. You know, you've got to find your passion, I think. You know, because especially if you want to apply it to, you know, your career, because you're going to be to spend your whole life doing something you're not passionate about would be pretty soul-destroying, I guess, you know, and there'd certainly be a lot of stress there.
What was it like for you breaking into the industry? Because it's obviously quite a hard industry to break into. I mean, it's a very sexy industry to be in. What was it like for you guys and for yourself? Did that feel any kind of pressure to get in, or was it love at first sight and it's kind of like you'll do whatever it takes?
It was, do you know what? At the time, me and Ben and I, as he corrects me on my grammar, we got a job in the middle of a really bad recession, I think it was early 90s. And that was because people in the industry, creatives at WCRS, was one guy in particular, Mark, can't remember his name. He spent so much time with us. People were so generous with their time. We used to phone them up, hassle them, and they'd always spend time with us. And I think we learned more from going to see people in the industry than what we did in 2 years at Hounslow, where we were studying. Mm. And I'm pretty sure, I don't think we finished our actual course there. So the qualification, I'm not sure we actually got HND, whether that means anything. I don't even know what it means. But, you know, we'd been offered a job before we left college, and we took it because it was a tough time. So, yeah, it wasn't hard for us to get into it. I think because we did work so hard, we really did work hard, me and Ben, you know, Ben and I.
What drove you guys then?
Well, I think it was, I mean, Ben is mischievous as well, isn't he? He's very argumentative. And I think, again, we just had that, we were kind of mischievous and wanted to give it a go. And we love what we do. I love designing. He loved writing. And we worked really hard together at it. You know, we kept going. I mean, we started at Leo Burnett and we was there for 6 years. And I learned a hell of a lot there. But it wasn't creatively where we wanted to be. And we found it very, very hard to get out of there and get into a creative agency that we did want to go to. I think we got very, very close at Hal Henry about 4 or 5 times, and Steve Henry would always turn around and go, not quite this time, boys. And but we never gave up. And again, at Simons Palmer, they were just such an amazing agency at the time, and we kept on knocking at their door, and again, we never gave up, and we ended up working there. So, you know, it's just, you've got to commit to it. You have got to work hard.
Mm. What was it like working at Simons Palmer?
It was great fun. It's bloody hard work. but it was great fun and I loved it. And they had the right, again, they shared, they were more in tune with my values than Leo Burnett, you know. So it worked, you know, and then you don't mind staying all night. You know, it's like, at Leo Burnett, we used to almost work till about 6 or 7 o'clock on, you know, the agency's briefs. And then from 7 o'clock till 11 or 12 at night, we would work on our own portfolio to make sure we had some good work to go and show the good agencies, you know.
Mm. So what is it that's kept you in the industry for so long?
I just love it. I love it. I've never, since I left school, I've never woken up once and not wanted to go into work. I love every part of it. You know, not that it's always been easy. You have tough days, but, I just really like thinking of ideas. I think that there's possibly some sort of chemical reaction in my brain when you think of something cool, and it's quite addictive. And then I love all the actual creative process and the disciplines of typography, photography. You know, you get to work with filmmakers and animators, and it's amazing. It's great.
Do you think there's a certain type of personality who thrives in this business?
I guess so. I don't know. I think you've got to be a bit mischievous, I think. Mm. You know, you've got to be, non-conformity is a very good way of describing how people succeed in this business as a creative, I think. Good creatives, they don't conform and their work doesn't, and that's why it works.
And do you think there's enough non-conformists in the business now? I mean, not just in advertising, across the entire creative spectrum.
Yeah, no, not at all, not at all. I think the whole creative world in most genres is very conformist, and it's very money, success driven first. There's some brilliant films out at the moment. There's a couple of really good films. I thought like Jojo Rabbit was incredible, and Parasite is just incredible. And you go, I'm hoping that, you know, people are starting to break some rules with filmmaking, and it seems to be more interesting now than it's ever been. Could do with a bit of that in music, I think.
Definitely. So when you went from being a creative to being a leader of other creatives, how did it change for you then, like from a mindset perspective? And okay, were the pressures the same? Were they different?
I guess you do. You have a certain, it is slightly different. I mean, in a way, I think actually generating the work, there's more pressure doing that than guiding people, to be honest. It is easier to creative direct, I think. But then there's certain pressures that come with it, and you have a responsibility to younger creatives, and, you know, it's your duty to look after them. So, you know, and that even comes down to doing your bloody damnedest to win a pitch and get new business in that's interesting and exciting for the younger creatives to work on, you know. So you feel a sense of pressure there, but again, all I'd sort of think is just try my bloody hardest and work my hardest, and yeah, it doesn't always work out, but you just go, you know, maybe again, it's like, it doesn't work out because those clients and those brands don't share the same values as what we do. And, you know, that's probably fine, to be honest. We just need a few that do share the same values.
When do you think pressure can turn from being a good thing, say stuff like healthy competition, personal ambition, that kind of pressure, to being a bad thing, a negative thing?
Right.
When can it switch? When have you seen it switch?
You know, as I said, there's so many different forces and tensions in your life. And as a creative, when that pressure gets on top and you can't be creative, that is a bad thing. You know, so I guess that if that is restricting your ability to be creative, you've got to try and acknowledge that, and you've got to try and suss out how to really sort that out, you know. And it could be a relationship thing or a financial thing, or you know, the company you're within, the culture you're working within. So as a creative, that's when it's a bad thing, if it restricts your creative thinking, I think, your ability to create.
It's interesting. And what are you most optimistic about with the future then? You talk about being a very optimistic character. What are you most optimistic about?
You know, fearing death, right? And health worries is obviously another big source of stress. And, you know, I've never worried about dying, which might sound odd, but you sort of go, I think a lot of people worry about, you know, their health and dying, and I sort of worry more about not living in a way. Do you know what I mean? So it's because I'm so optimistic, you know, that's the way I see that sort of thing. You know, if I died tomorrow, it would just go, well, I wouldn't really regret much at all. You know, I'd hope my kids would go, oh, shit, yeah, dad's dead, and I'd hope they'd move on, you know, really.
Talking about family, how have you guys managed to keep such a strong family? Do you want to talk about that? Because there's a lot of people who, when they're put under a lot of pressure and they get a lot of time in the kind of public eye, whether it's themselves personally or the work they create, sometimes marriages and families don't survive that because people will take that back home with them, et cetera, et cetera. What's your secret?
Well, again, that's a huge, you know, it's a huge tension point, isn't it? You know, the work-life balance. And again, I'm so lucky, you know, I've met Kerry 20 years ago and she was a creative in the business. So she does understand what I go through and what I have to do sometimes, you know, and how you do have to put weekends in and all that sort of stuff. So she gets it. And, you know, I'm just very lucky that, again, when I think she is my soulmate, and, you know, finding that person, I was kind of very strict on that as well. You know, I was very clear about the sort of girl that I wanted to marry. And, you know, it's just like she gets me, she shares the same values as me, and there's less tension there because of it.
So do you think it helps to have someone who knows what the industry's like?
Well, I get not maybe it's not essential, but at least someone who shares the same values as you, you know. So
yeah.
But then at the same time, you know, one of my other things that I keep in my head is about giving a shit and not giving a shit in equal amounts. And I think, you know, that's not a bad way of looking at certain situations. And you go, you know, if you don't care enough, you're going to fuck up. But if you care too much, you're going to have other issues, other problems in life. You know, and there comes a point where you just got to walk away, and family is, you know, often, it possibly is more important than work.
I think what's really interesting about hearing you talk, Matt, because it's kind of like, you talk about values a lot and about loving what you do and being clear about and being grateful for what you do. And I think a lot of people there's three things that they kind of tend to lose track of, which is a sense of self, a sense of purpose, and a sense of perspective. Seems to be that you've managed to keep those. You know who you are, you know what you're doing and why you're doing it,
yeah.
And you know when to give a fuck and when to not.
Well, do you know what? A lot of that comes from the music I listen to. And I'm always listening to music, and you go, you know, there's so many different aspects of each different genre or style of songwriting or whatever. And you go, music can make you feel grateful, it can make you feel rebellious, you know, it has everything to me. And, you know, I'll put together a playlist at the end if people are interested, but just some of the songs that you go, yeah, wow. Listen to Jimmy Cliff, The Harder They Come, or, you know, Billie Holiday, Strange Fruit, and you go, fucking hell, you think you've got problems. It's powerful stuff, you know, and I find it very inspiring. And then, you know, completely liberating, fuck you stuff, rock and roll, whatever, Iggy Pop, all of that.
It's great. Well, you've got a combination of high energy there, but you've also got that kind of a way of keeping perspective about, look, people have got it shitter.
Yeah, exactly. Listen to some blues, man. I mean, again, it's like, you know, any great creative work, it always comes out of struggle, doesn't it? It's got to. It's got to have that pressure and tension and, you know, it's got to be there in your life. So again, it's not something to worry about too much. And, you know, great creative work, it does come out of that, of difficulty, I think.
I do totally agree. Was it Eric Clapton who actually, when his life was getting too easy, would seek out a way to screw
it
up?
I think a lot of musicians do that, yeah. Yeah. Mm. Maybe they have to go to a dark place to get to the good stuff, you know. Don't do that, though. Don't go to a dark place just to write adverts.
What's the darkest place you've ever been?
For me, a dark place is doing work that I fucking hate, that I think is just pointless. You know, it's just stuff that I'm sometimes, you know, not recently, but I have been forced to spend a lot of time working on creative work that I just don't believe in, and that is a dark place for me.
And what's the happiest you've ever been?
Now. I'm always, do you know what? I'm always happy.
So what do you think, there's anyone who takes life a bit too seriously? And what would be your advice to the people who take life a bit too seriously?
I mean, as a creative, I don't know if you're going to do amazing creative work if you take it too seriously. You've got to kind of let go a bit and not give a fuck. And I think that, you know, I know you, Matty, have talked a lot about how the creative brain works, and you need to, it needs to sort of digest stuff, you know, and you need to walk away and relax and go do something else. And then your brain kind of works out the, you know, what the answer is creatively. And I think if you take it too seriously, that's possibly not good for the creative process.
Well, it builds up too much fear then, doesn't it? It's good to have a healthy amount of fear, but not into a panic attack mode.
Yeah, but again, you know, it's that balance of giving a shit and not giving a shit. You know, if you don't take it serious enough and you piss around and, you know, you don't focus, then that's not good.
So what do you do? What how do you focus? What do you do to focus?
How do I focus? I mean, if anything, I focus by walking out of the agency and going for a walk and wandering a bit. You know, it's a weird one. It's almost the opposite of focusing, but that's really how I get to good ideas, I think. You know, you work hard, you thresh a load of ideas out and try and stir some thinking up in your brain, and then walk away and let your brain work it out.
Bang on. I mean, you're talking science. That's called the flow cycle, where you have that struggle phase where we kind of preload the frontal cortex with all the data and the information, some YouTube videos, podcasts, whatever. But then you've got to have a breakout phase. You break away from the problem so the unconscious can do the work. Then when you sit back down, you get into that flow state where just stuff comes tumbling out. And then you have a recovery phase and you go back to struggle, breakout, flow, etc., etc., repeat, step and repeat. I mean, that's science now. I mean, did you just learn that, or were you taught that, or was it just something you've kind of stumbled across?
I think it's something I've always just done, really. Again, it's quite a natural thing for me.
And do you think people do that enough? Because it's kind of, there's some businesses, and it's not just agencies, but there's some businesses where, because a lot of open plan happens, that people probably aren't getting out into the world enough and kind of like smashing their heads against the laptop with the headphones on. Do you think that's a good way of creating work, or not a great way of creating work?
No, it's not good. Yeah, it's weird. Like the sort of open plan thing, I guess there's pressure there to be seen at your desk. And, you know, I don't really care what time someone comes in, what time they leave, where they sit and where they do their work, as long as they turn up to the meeting on, you know, and they hit the deadline with great, interesting ideas. That's all that matters. And I guess an open plan office it's not always the best environment for that.
So what advice would you give young creatives now?
Well, I think they've got to suss it out themselves. You know, what works for me ain't going to work for everyone, you know. And, you know, I was thinking, like, if I was, you know, if I was talking to myself, you know, if I was giving myself advice now, if I was giving myself 25 years ago advice, it's all the stuff that I've been talking about today. It's like, work out what your values are, work for people that share the same values, work hard, and then find some sort of release, you know. And for me, it's music, you know. So again, that's advice for me, is to find inspiration that just lets you, you know, sort of gives you a release in some sort of way, and then find someone you bloody love as well. Just do the shit you love. Find the thing you love, find the person you love, and find the fucking company you love working for. There you go.
Great advice, isn't it? It's kind of straight on the nose.
Yeah, and then if you get all those ticked, you know, then the stress isn't there. It's just not. Mm.
And who's kind of like responsible? There's a lot of talk about stress and mental health and et cetera within the creative industries as a whole. Whose responsibility is it to look after their mental health? Whose responsibility is it to kind of like make sure that their brains aren't going to burn themselves out? Is it the individual who has to take personal responsibility, that kind of extreme ownership style? Or is it the business that should be worrying and taking that responsibility?
I think it's both, but I do really think that there needs to be, you know, like the individual are the ones that can really change it, and they should be doing it. The creative director should be looking after their young teams, because that's their output, you know, that's their workforce, and that's how they're going to get good work out of them. And, you know, again, I've been bloody lucky with, you know, I mean, Tony and Kim, they never, at Wydens, they never, you know, they really did look after us in a way, because they, when we was growing up, you know, they took us from being a creative team to running big bits of global business, you know, but they never, they always helped us along the way. They didn't throw us in the deep end, and in a way they did really look after us, you know. So I never felt the stress in any, you know, in any of the next level of my career, in a way, because I've been looked after, and I can thank Tony, Kim and Neil and at Wydens for that, really. The only reason why we left Wydens was because I wasn't scared. I got too comfortable. Mm. And again, this comes back to pressure being a good thing. And, you know, I like being scared. I think it's a good thing. I think it's motivating, and I think it's good for creativity. So we wanted to go, I wanted to go somewhere and do something that scared me, basically.
Absolutely. And it's really interesting. I think you've got like a really healthy blend of fear and love. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's the thing. You want to be scared, but if you're scared and in love with what you do, the people you work for, the clients, the people you're working with, I think you've got something that's magic there, haven't you? So you are pressure-proof by having that balance point.
Yeah, totally. Give a fuck and don't give a fuck in equal amounts. You know, it's love and fear, I guess, isn't it? I sort of take one day at a time as well, you know. I sort of look at the future, and I've no doubt we're going to smash it with this company, you know, but I don't think it's going to, you know, there's certain ways. I mean, when you're starting a business, it is advisable to have a 5-year plan and a growth plan. And it's usually, with that in mind, it's usually as something to aim for if you want to sell in 5 years. So you've got to be turning over a certain amount of money to attract investors to buy. And I'm not massively interested in that. So, you know, I'm more about building a long-term thing for you know, who, what, why, and doing it well, you know, and creating an agency that is bulletproof for the future. And there's all sorts of challenges with that, and I think it's about attracting great talent. It's something that we're going to try a lot harder to get, you know, kids in, you know, not who don't always have these opportunities, and opening up the business to those kids. And then it's also about thinking what an agency should be in the future, and trying to just get be in the right place with it, you know.
So is there anything I've not touched upon or spoken about that you want to share with our listeners?
The sort of pressure that great film directors handle is just incredible. You know, the story of Hearts of Darkness and Coppola shooting Apocalypse Now is just unbelievable. It's like, and you know, he had all his money that he'd made from, you know, The Godfather, ploughed into the production of Apocalypse Now, and every single thing went wrong, and I don't know how he kept going, and it's like, that's pretty admirable. So you can find, you know, those stories that are very inspiring, and there's always inspiring people that have handled pressure in any creative discipline, I think. Mm. So yeah, find some inspiration, I think. And I'll get together a bit of a playlist thing, just some of the tracks that have that I really, you know, admire and have inspired me and helped me through certain things. So yeah, I'll do that. Fantastic. Yeah, awesome. And just remember, I mean, for me it's like to give a shit and don't give a shit in equal amounts, and that's it for me.
I think it's a great thing. Do you think swearing helps sometimes?
No, I don't know. Maybe. That's just because I can't articulate myself very well.
Apparently, people who swear more than others are more intelligent.
Oh, I love it, mate. Love it. I knew that. That's good. I don't swear at home, you know. I never swear at home. Really? Maybe that's why my kids think I'm stupid. Yeah. Fucking hell, I haven't really thought about that.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you so much, Matt. It's been a pleasure as always to chat to you.
I doubt if anyone will listen to it. No one ever listens to me anyway, mate.
If you liked today's show, please don't forget to subscribe, rate, comment and share. And if you'd like to learn more about my work as a sustainable high-performance coach, flow state trainer and workshop facilitator, head across to leadingleft.com, where you can also join the waitlist for my upcoming membership site and private mastermind group. Until next time, take good care of business and that creative brain of yours.